From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, September 5th through Friday, September 9th, 2022. It started with Labor Day. I know that seems like years ago. And then it was a week of new stuff overseas, dominated by a major changing of the guard in the United Kingdom, the passing of the Queen, the succession to a new king, and if that's not enough, the selection of a new prime minister. Other than that, it was the same old criminal investigations into a former president, gun terror on the streets, record-breaking heat and global flooding, more war in Ukraine, economic uncertainty, the pandemic that chooses to linger, political mudslinging, immigration woes, pictures from space, and what do you know, the debut of a new iPhone. Get ready for a powerful hour of Black Belt Talk Radio, during which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. We've got lefties, we've got righties, and we've got fence-sitters. Please don't get angry. Just listen closely. And while doing so, maintain a degree of educated skepticism, regardless of whether or not you agree. We'll be joined by Kevin Casey at Talkers with a countdown to the 10 biggest topics of the week. Tim Van Horn in Memphis. Victoria Jones in Washington, D.C. Matthew B. Harrison in Springfield, Massachusetts. Sandy Rios in Florida. And Richard Neer in New York. Influential yappers from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations and the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do a daily dance of affirmation in a fragmented, noisy world where we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations across the U.S. and the U.K., the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information's gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. This installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap is being brought to you in part by my new music video with Gun Hill Road on YouTube titled Idiots at idiotsvideo.com. It'll make you happy that you're not brain dead. That's idiotsvideo.com. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, the executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, let's run down the 10 most talked about topics on talk shows across America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10, a tie between big tech and the kickoff of the new NFL season. Apple took center stage this week in the world of digital era dialogue with the release of its new iPhone 14.
And the NFL took center stage in the sports world with the start of its new season Thursday evening with the Super Bowl champion LA Rams falling big time to the ascending Buffalo Bills.
At number 9, climate change, heat wave, and floods. The record-breaking heat wave in California and the western states has proven to be a health threat, as well as contributing to a potential energy crisis.
Floods in Pakistan have one-third of that nation submerged underwater. Climate change continues to grow as a global concern. Once considered quirky, it's one of the primary initiatives of England's new king, as the UK faces a huge energy crisis going into the colder months. More on that in a moment.
At number 8, COVID-19. New vaccines and boosters continue to provide both conversation and controversy in the national dialogue about the ongoing pandemic.
However, in spite of the continuing spread of new and recurring cases, not to mention hundreds of deaths per day, the general public seems to be accepting life with COVID and moving forward with its normal routines, relegating most of the pandemic conversation to analyzing the changes it's imposed upon the workplace and business operations.
At number 7, immigration. Washington, D.C. declared a public emergency Thursday to provide services to asylum seekers who have been arriving on buses from border states for months now. Mayor Muriel Bowser announced the creation of the Office of Migrant Services, funded with an initial $10 million and the hope that the money will be reimbursed by FEMA.
Meantime, news about Steve Bannon's alleged help build the border wall scam has reignited public interest in taking real action to build a wall of some sort along the southern border.
At number 6, a three-way tie between education, race relations, and LGBTQ rights. September is back to school month, and with it has come a slew of issues as America's education system tries to recover from the havoc wreaked by COVID-19.
Competing views on the teaching of the history of race relations in America and the handling of competing attitudes relating to gender identification are also being played out in the classrooms and school board meetings across the country.
At number 5, the death of Queen Elizabeth II, a new British prime minister, and the Russia-Ukraine war. Had news of the passing of Queen Elizabeth II come earlier in the week, it would have been higher on the talkers' survey of talk show conversation. Regardless, as we head into the weekend, it is the big buzz across America and around the world.
The UK, a nation that craves cultural and political stability, has been rocked by changes, as it also has a brand new prime minister and is in a crucial geopolitical position regarding the Russia-Ukraine war.
At number 4, the economy. Economic uncertainty continues to rule the day, not just in the United States, but around the world.
Inflation remains at the heart of the crisis, not to mention looming energy shortages and the confusion of mixed messages regarding the markets, recession, and the Fed's handling of interest rates.
At number 3, crime, violence, and homelessness. The horrific shooting spree in Memphis this week was yet another heinous reminder that we have an awful problem in this country.
It marks what most news talk show hosts and their callers recognize as the terrible results of police defunding, incompetent district attorneys, and shockingly lenient judges who are clearly out to lunch.
At number 2, politics and elections. Former President Donald Trump has endorsed more than 200 Republican candidates in the ongoing primaries across the nation, many of them election deniers, and they have thus far proven to be successful in a large percentage of the races.
However, many Democrats see that as a blessing in disguise in terms of how these candidates will fare come November and the general midterm elections.
And at number 1 this week, the continuing aftermath of Mar-a-Lago, Trump legal issues, and the indictment of Steve Bannon. The latest chapter in the ongoing FBI raid and Justice Department probe of former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago documents to gain currency in the national conversation has been the granting of his request to have a special master appointed to objectively scrutinize these papers. Because the judge who made this decision is a Trump appointee, the Department of Justice is appealing the decision.
Meantime, other Trump-related legal issues are brewing all over the place, with significant attention being paid to the aforementioned New York indictment of Steve Bannon over his alleged activities in scamming supporters of millions in a non-existent project to build a border wall. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Let's kick off the interview section of the show, speaking with one of our favorite go-to guys, the talented morning host at KWAM, the Mighty 990, our affiliate in Memphis, Tennessee, Tim Van Horn. Well, Tim, unfortunately, there's been a mass shooting spree in your hometown of Memphis, and I'll bet it's been obviously the big topic of conversation. Interestingly, the last time we had you on the Wrap and the last time I spoke with you for the Michael Harrison interview, we talked about crime and we talked about guns, and you discussed how it's one of the big problems there. What has happened, and how is the Memphis area reacting to it?
Michael, it's always good to talk with you. I hate that it's under these circumstances, but thank you for recalling that conversation, because as a lifelong Memphian, it pains me. It hurts me. It hurts my family, our listeners, what has become of our city. And what we have seen, and we only need to go back a week, Michael, because and I'm sure many people know the national story about the shooting rampage of the 19-year-old that killed 4 and injured 3 from Thursday. But this city, we still haven't finished processing and grieving for that young teacher who was on a morning jog and got kidnapped and slain. And it's like this just piles on top of that. And right now, this is a city where a lot of people are going, wait a second, this isn't the city that I love. What is happening here? It seems like there's a lack of respect for life, and law and order just can't keep up with the demand for the phone calls to the police to come save the day. And as I said, I've been here all of my life, live here, will probably die here. And I think what we're seeing is, one, we are seeing people who are experiencing for the first time in their lives, where the government says, do not come out until we tell you it's okay, because we have this crime spree, this active shooter going on. The entire city, in fact, the county was asked to stay in place. Restaurants, there was a minor league baseball game. There is a fall festival called the Delta Fair, and they were all told to shelter in place, to not leave. People were eating in nice restaurants across town and told, you can't leave until we catch this thug one way or the other. And for the first time in many people's lives, it's a wake-up call that we have a problem that needs to be addressed, and it needed to be addressed yesterday and the day before that and for quite some time.
Are the people supportive of this form of a lockdown? It reminds me of what happened with the Boston Marathon bomber, that they basically shut the whole city down and nobody complained. It was like, you ain't going to get away with this in Boston. The entire city just absolutely mobilized behind the police, and they found the brothers. Has there been any type of a reaction as to that kind of strong government action upon people's mobility and freedom?
There, from what I've seen throughout the day so far, Michael, I haven't seen any complaint on this, because this was happening in real time, spontaneous. There was no time to react. Everyone knew the narrative. There's a guy out shooting people just because. There was no rhyme or reason. Mm. He was going from carjacking to carjacking. Police were having a tough time keeping track of which vehicle this thug was in. So I think people understood is, we don't know which zip code this guy is in, where he's going next. It's in our best interest to hunker down now. And this took place over about a 3 to 4 hour period, where people were advised to stay inside. And then, of course, once he was brought into custody, that was immediately lifted. But to answer your question, I have not seen any negative response to that, because in this situation, I think it 100% fit. And in relation to Boston, I think that's what Memphians were thinking too. It's like, let's get, you know, whatever it takes, let's get this guy.
And as you were explaining it, I realized that the question's a little off target, because it is a different thing. It was in real time and the crime was still going on, as opposed to it being a manhunt. Although in Boston, there was the fear that they could, or he could, or whoever it was, could strike again. The randomness of it, you know, a bomb is going to fall, you don't know where, that type of thing, you know. There's a randomness to it that terrifies everybody wherever they might be. And it also shows you the mayhem that a crazy person some type of psychopath or a terrorist group, a small group of people with some strong guns and anti-civil feelings, it could turn a society upside down. It doesn't take much. You know, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's absolutely amazing. And I first got wind of this. I had some text messages sent to me of some Facebook posts of people that had seen this guy begin to get on Facebook Live and broadcast these shootings. And I had not seen the video firsthand at that point, but my thought was, okay, this seems too awful to be true. So I'm looking around, I'm taking a deep breath. I'm not worried about being first. I just want to be correct, and I want to be emphatic with information and a reaction to it. Then moments later, we got the city watch for Memphis about this guy. And within minutes, he had already shot 3-4 people, you know, even walking into an auto parts store and opening fire on somebody just because. I mean, you look at that, it's like you have somebody that maybe went to the store to go get some windshield wiper fluid, for his wife's car or something. And next thing you know, you know, he's critically wounded and sent to, you know, our Regional 1 trauma center. I mean, it happens so quickly and it turns so many lives upside down. And the sad thing about it is there's a common thread with this and the gentleman who is facing the justice system for kidnapping and killing the jogger. As both of these people have been through the justice system and were able to get out sooner than expected and went back and either repeated or committed worse crimes. And that has the city and the residents and listeners asking a lot of questions about a lot of things in the justice system. I don't think you can pin it on one particular individual. I don't think one person has that power, but it has us looking at our justice system and many of the different components. Are we, or our listeners are asking, hey, are we staffing? Are we funding our police to properly patrol the city? Is the district attorney wisely choosing how they prosecute? Are justices meeting out justice? Is there closure for the families? There's so many questions, and we've just scratched the surface, and I don't think we're anywhere near an answer right now, Michael. We're at the raw stage where we haven't even been able to put the Band-Aid on.
That's Tim Van Horn, host of the morning show at our affiliate KWAM, the Mighty 990, in Memphis, Tennessee. Coming up next, several huge stories breaking out of the United Kingdom. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Do you sometimes get the feeling that our society is being overrun by idiots? Do all the stupid, dumb things people say and do make you crazy, 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 crazy? If so, the new song and video by Gun Hill Road is for you.
Idiots walk among us.
They're lazy, lazy, lazy.
Idiots talk among us.
Their speech is often hazy.
Idiots talk among us.
Never ceases to amaze me.
Idiots talk among us.
Tries me crazy, crazy, crazy.
Crazy, 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 crazy.
It's called Idiots. Check out the video. It's free. Idiotsvideo.com. That's idiotsvideo.com. That's idiotsvideo.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. Several major stories broke out of the UK this past week where they have a new king and a new prime minister as well as an energy crisis. Joining us is our international woman in Washington, D.C. and a native of Great Britain, Victoria Jones. It just never seemed it would happen that Queen Elizabeth II would die. As a native of Great Britain, what are your feelings?
I feel very sad. She's obviously the only monarch I've ever known. And I didn't think that she would live out 2022, really, once Philip, her husband, died. I thought she'd live for the Jubilee, but I did not think that she would continue much beyond that. I knew she was determined. I felt she was determined for the Jubilee, but I just did not feel that she was necessarily determined beyond that. But you can't tell with people. However, on the day that it happened, there was signals from the palace that it was happening. And I knew it was happening on Thursday, because the palace statements were a little more frequent. There were words used like serious, concerned, and all the children were gathered. We were told Charles was at her side. These things do not happen unless it's very serious. So I knew that she was dying, and I thought it was possible that she was actually dead even before the announcement was made.
What is this going to do to the British psyche, in your opinion? The nation is facing energy shortages tied into the Russia-Ukraine war. There's a brand new prime minister, Liz Truss, which I'd like to talk about, and we'll get into that in a moment. But just in terms of the psyche of a nation, the emotional state of a nation. I know that's an abstract concept, but it's something that you, who, you know, hail from that culture, and yet you kind of have a good perspective on it because you obviously are an American citizen now and have lived here for a very long time and operate within American media. So maybe you can give us an outsider, insider perspective of how will this affect the nervous system, the psychology of the UK?
A lot will depend on King Charles III and on how he takes on this role, which he's been waiting for his entire life, obviously. He's 73, 74 now. This role is supposed to represent stability. And it's a time, as you just mentioned, of a lot of changes and a lot of difficulties for the British people. He has been the Prince of Wales and been very active and doing much service. And he listens to people and he talks with people and he does have opinions. I would think he will be a different kind of king from the way the Queen was. Nevertheless, I think he knows very well indeed that this is a time where he has to set a tone of stability, of optimism, courage, and reassurance that the monarchy is here to stay. He is very well aware, I'm quite sure, that there's been talk that, oh, well, after Elizabeth, there isn't anything more. I'm quite sure he's well aware of that. I'm quite sure he's aware there's a school of thought that says, oh, he should just hand it on to William. He has to show that, no, that's not the way it's going to be, that I am king and I'm going to be a good king.
If he's a good king, there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to keep the king thing going. I mean, after all, those who follow the royals know a bit about history. Queen Elizabeth II's father was king, and he became king under extraordinarily difficult circumstances. When his brother abdicated the throne, there was a scandal involved. Weren't people saying back then, of course, I don't think you were born yet, but you know your history. Weren't people saying back then, the monarchy cannot survive?
They've said it many times. The palace recently put out a statement regarding it, something that there was a controversy about, saying that he would remain politically neutral as king. I'm quite sure that there are issues that he will continue to feel passionate about, the environment, architecture style, farming, alternative medicines, sustainability, urban renewal, things like that. He's not necessarily on the same page as the incoming Prime Minister, Liz Truss, on some of these issues.
She obviously is a conservative. I get the feeling following King Charles III. That's going to be his name, right? King Charles III.
Yes, that's confirmed, yes.
The former Prince Charles. He seems to have been, and there's no reason why he won't continue, to be quite the liberal. Am I correct in that?
I think on some issues he is. He believes passionately in farming, but in farming the land to sustain the land and to support farmers.
Farmers. Is there an issue there with agriculture?
I think, you know, the family farmer, not necessarily big agribusiness.
Oh, well, that's actually an issue around America as well. The American family farmer is under tremendous duress right now because of many things whereby legislation goes to the lobbyists that big pharma, and I don't mean it with a PH, you know, the big farming corporate power. They exert that, so I guess it's not that different in the UK. I could see Charles keeping things steady for a while. It's the next generation that I'm concerned. Not that I'm concerned. I really personally find it all very amusing, very interesting, but I don't see it of great consequence. But I think it's the next generation whereby there'll be the problems. It'll be interesting to watch. What is your reaction to my comment that I find it interesting but not of great consequence?
Well, it's of great consequence. He's king of 14 nations. It is of consequence in that sense. Stability is important when you look at Europe, even though Britain pulled out of Brexit, you know, pulled out of Europe. It is an important country. It's a buffer country between the land mass of Europe and the United States. It's an important country in that sense. It's an English-speaking country. The United States has great ties with it. It's one of the five eyes in terms of intelligence sharing with the United States and the other three countries that share intelligence, real secret intelligence. That's important. So in trade, it's important. I think it has a trusted army. It has excellent training for the military. It has a long military history. I think it is important in all those ways. So, yes, I think it's important. Also, he advises the prime minister. The prime minister usually meets with the king or the queen once every week. And if the prime minister and the king don't have a good relationship, that can be a really interesting meeting. You know, the queen did not get on with one or two prime ministers. And if she doesn't sit, they can't sit. So she can stand for hours. She can stand for 5, 6, 7 hours. So there were a few of them she never sat down for. She just made them stand up.
The Queen, from what I understand, hadn't been having these regular meetings with the Prime Minister or Prime Ministers, perhaps, for a while now. Is that the case?
Yes. I think there were some things that she had pulled back on because of her health, and I believe that's one of them.
Let's turn our attention to the new prime minister. Who is Liz Truss?
Liz Truss is a Conservative member of parliament for one of the areas on the east coast of England. And she's a Conservative, which is the right wing of the party. She was not always that way. When she went to Oxford University, she was a Liberal Democrat, which is the middle party. And then she switched. She was against Brexit. She voted against Brexit as a Conservative. Then after it passed, she became a very strong supporter of Brexit. So some people say she's a bit of an opportunist, and she changes with which way the wind blows. And that is actually, if she is, has done her very well. She's interested in policy. She does not have that much experience with many of the issues that the prime minister will deal with. People who know her, one of her reputations is for being a bit odd. That's all I can say is that she's considered a bit odd.
Well, after Boris Johnson, how odd could she be? I mean, Boris Johnson, if it weren't for the fact that Donald Trump was president at that time, talk about odd. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it's odd.
People like odd in Britain.
Yeah, well, I remember you explaining what the aspects of Boris Johnson's oddness that seemed to appeal to a certain British sensibility. You know, but I'm, you know, that's neither here nor there. So you're not really sure what the actual measurement of this
oddness
is.
The oddities are. No, but I'll say one thing that was kind of astounding. At Prime Minister's, her first Prime Minister's questions, she answered policy questions with actual answers, which was surprising because Boris Johnson never answered any questions. He just sort of, you know, parried and made jokes and took shots at people. She actually gave answers. This was completely new.
Well, it's nice to see a politician somewhere give answers. Most of them are masters of, dodging the bullets of probing questions. You have many contacts in the media and personally in the UK. What's the general feeling there in the media, in the government, the people to this new prime minister?
The feeling is that she's got a couple of years because there will be a general election in 2024. That's mandated. She's got a couple of years. She's facing huge inflation, enormous energy problems because of the war in Ukraine. The National Health Service has huge problems. She's facing a number of other major issues, and people are really, really hacked off. And can she solve them no matter what she does? And she's not a big spender. But she announced an energy plan that involves massive amounts of spending. Can she solve them in 2 years? She doesn't even have the support of all of her own members of parliament of her own party. She's got a really tough 2 years.
I've heard her described as a hawk, particularly
yes,
in terms of the war that we're all waging right now with Russia. I mean, even though it's the Russia-Ukraine war, I mean, it's a proxy war between Russia and the West. What do you know about that? Is she a hawk or is that, you know, it's hard to tell with somebody who's a chameleon the way she's been throughout her career. Or is that just maybe just what she's saying right now? Not that you can read her mind, but, you know, your thoughts are certainly more accurate about this than mine.
Her language has been very hawkish. Her language has been even more hawkish than the United States' language has been regarding Russia. And one gets the impression that she's relishing taking on Russia with regard to the war in Ukraine, really looking forward to it.
That's our Washington correspondent, Victoria Jones. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Big tech is almost always on the talker survey. Turning now to the man on the other side of the glass, the executive producer of the Michael Harrison Wrap, talker's associate publisher and law professor, Matthew B. Harrison. Matthew, you're always way ahead of me on these matters. So one of the big big tech stories of the week was that Apple announced iPhone 14. What does that mean?
Well, it means that there's another reason to upgrade. Uh-oh. It's a better camera and better battery life. Yay!
I'll tell you something, better camera. I mean, you know, those cameras are not good anymore. I'm kidding. Those cameras are putting the camera business out of business. I mean,
yes, everyone seems to be quite a talented photographer with the latest and greatest iPhone camera. The other interesting thing that's being added to this version is you can now text via an emergency SOS system that uses satellite if you're unable to connect to emergency services via the cellular or Wi-Fi connection. It's a little slower, but it's their attempt at being able to last-ditch rescue you if you are off the grid.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I don't often think of people being off the grid, but I guess there still are cases where you can be off the grid, and whereas we worry about our privacy from being on the grid, there's cases when you really do want to be on the grid, and I guess it addresses that. That could be a game changer, can't it?
Yeah, I believe that this will now become the standard that all phones will have to follow, as this becomes what is reasonably necessary to prevent potential liability for people in the future.
How much does it cost?
$750, same as the last one, but still pretty expensive for a phone.
That's our producer, Matthew B. Harrison. Coming up next, a visit with Sandy Rios of American Family Radio. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
This report is brought to you by Genesis 2 Project, G2P. Recently, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released a preliminary report on possible threats posed by UFOs, now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, UAP, and the progress the Department of Defense UAP Task Force has made in understanding any threats. Dr. J.C. Van Valkenburg is a former Los Alamos National Lab biophysicist who has been working with G2P to bring scientifically sound UAP data to the public.
G2P has released the first scientifically authenticated documentation of UAPs, including images captured with infrared technology. Primo Forensics performed the digital forensic analysis.
In tandem with the ODNI report, these data support the development of relevant processes, policies, technologies, and training for the U.S. military and government personnel upon encountering UAP. Visit Genesis2Project.com.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. September is Back to School Month. And this year, the issues involved in American education are more dramatic and controversial than we've seen in a long time. To get some perspective, we turn to a multi-award-winning broadcaster, the host of the morning show on American Family Radio, Sandy Rios. Sandy, what are your thoughts as the kids are returning to school?
Well, of all the things that we are concerned about, and certainly there's an abundance of them right now, I think the thing that really bothers me the most, Michael, is what's happening to our kids. Because some of what we were experiencing, you know, we brought on ourselves by decisions we made, people we elected, but our kids, they're innocent in all of this. So when I see them kept out of school for a couple of years and I see their reading and math scores plummeting like 7, 9 points, taking us to 30-year lows, the lowest we've ever been, that grieves me. When I see the sexualization of kids in public school, I'm shocked. I just don't, no matter how you feel about gender differences, about homosexuality, gay marriage, whatever you feel, I think it's a rare American who grew up in this country who thinks that kindergartners or preschoolers or grade schoolers or even middle schoolers have to know about what they're being taught, especially when they're taught that to the neglect of math and reading. I find it appalling and horrendous. And so our kids are testing so poorly internationally. They have been for some time now. And that's because the nuts and bolts of education, which have nothing to do with those other things, whether it's sexuality or immigration or, I don't know, multiculturalism, all the other things that have become like the canon or the holy grail of the left, has happened at the expense of real education. So I can think that all parents want their kids to be educated so that they can function and read and write and function in this world.
Yeah, and some people, though, do like to indoctrinate, and brainwashing is part of growing up, and there's a fine line between parenting where you can encourage your child to follow in your footsteps and indoctrinating them to follow in your footsteps. It's a very fine line between brainwashing and educating. That being said, I get the feeling that aside from the politics of it, that just in terms of the atmosphere in schools, the general feeling and vibes, if you will, in schools, grade school, high school, and certainly in colleges and universities, that it has shifted to more of a touchy-feely type of a thing, as opposed to, as you pointed out, read and write and arithmetic, read and write and reason, as my friend Dom Giordano in Philadelphia has a podcast by that name, read and write and reason, that if you care too much about how students feel and don't point them in the direction of discipline, and I don't mean discipline by hitting them with the ruler on the rod. I mean discipline, like, you know, how to learn to play a guitar or a violin, or to stay in shape, or be an athlete. The work, the practice, the reps, if you will. I think we're heading in that wrong direction, and I would assume that's the basis of what you're talking about too. Too much of this touchy-feely. How do you feel? Are you happy? As opposed to, hey, get to work.
Well, yes, I totally agree with you. Plus, I would add, you know, every girl is a princess and every child is wonderful. That's great, honey. You're wonderful. You're the best. That's just absolutely not true. It sets our children up for failure. Not every girl is beautiful. Not every boy is talented and athletic. They are not all champions, and they don't naturally actually do what's right. They have to be disciplined. And, you know, discipline is not a negative. I mean, you can think of it as, you know, old-fashioned spanking, which I bet you got and I did too. Or we could think of it as something positive. Discipline is a positive move by rational parents to improve the behavior and lifestyle of our children. It can happen in different ways, but it is a positive thing. And to not discipline, to not teach them to get up or brush their teeth or, you know, do their homework or be respectful or mind their tongue or whatever the values that we want to instill. We used to know what they were in the United States, but much of that's been lost. But whatever they are, that's what we do for our children. We don't let them grow up. I met a Frenchman once when I lived in Germany. And I remember he came driving. I was meeting him for some purpose. I can't even tell you why. It's been so long. He drove up in a Citroen, and he had a little boy about 7. And the little boy was just wild. He was just everywhere, wild, a wild child. And the Frenchman said to me, you know, we raise our children, they're like weeds. We like to let them grow like wild weeds. And I thought to myself, well, I don't think so. I think I'm seeing a wild weed, and it's not very pleasant, and it's only going to get worse. And that's kind of the way I think we're raising our kids now, to let all of them do exactly what they want when they want to do it. And it's a recipe for disaster.
A lot of parents don't see the negative side of their children. Oh, not my kid. Parents, teachers have a tough time with that, that the parents don't see it. And that's a form of delusion that's part of this equation as well.
Well, that's right. Sometimes I think children have become like buying a new car or acquiring certain things that bring you status. And so children that are viewed that way as an extension of their parents, like a mom who has a pretty girl who dates a lot, she gets such a thrill because perhaps she didn't have that same experience. That's just kind of inverted thinking. I think we take our children who come to us as individuals created by God, who have various gifts, and some of them don't have many gifts. Some of them are beautiful. Some of them are average. Most of them are average. And we take those children who are, they do come to us as little wild weeds when they're born. They come to us selfish. No one has to teach them to say no or mine. They learn that on their own. And it's our job to grow them successfully like we do plants. In a garden, we water and we weed and we make sure that they are face the sun. We want them to grow up so that they can flourish whatever their abilities, their natural abilities are. They can't all be roses, and they certainly aren't all, we don't want them to all be weeds. They have to have some kind of molding and shaping. And not everything they do is good. I really reject the notion that we brag on our children so much. I think that is so unhealthy. I've actually seen adult children, I'll try to tell this quickly, who have been, I know I'm thinking of one in particular, who has been boasted about for her entire life. And then I saw her crash and burn at a university because she did not have the talent that her parents always claimed that she had. But they built her up to such a point that she had a different view of herself. It was not accurate, and she could not compete. And was devastating to her. This is what we do to kids when we tell them untruths. We brag when they don't deserve the bragging. When we don't speak the truth and we don't say that was wrong, you can't do that, you need to go apologize, or whatever the situation is. That's good parenting. And that's what we have to reclaim.
It's Sandy Rios, host of The Morning Show on American Family Radio. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. We have time for one more. I don't know about you, but I'll be watching at least one football game this weekend, and it's that time of year again. September, great month for sports. Joining us is legendary sports talk radio host Richard Neer of WFAN All Sports Radio in New York City. Football has to be a real shot in the arm for sports talk radio.
It certainly is, although in New York, where I'm based, the baseball pennant races are pretty hot. The Mets and Yankees are both very good. And, baseball, was sort of dead at the beginning of the year. It seems like forever ago when there was a lockout and we weren't sure that baseball was even going to be played this year. And they came up with some new rules and a new playoff format, and we thought, we'll see if this is working. We'll see if the fans are annoyed because of the time when the players wanted money and the owners wanted money and they couldn't get together. But the baseball season has worked out and has been one of the most exciting baseball seasons in many a year, including a possible record-breaking home run pace by Aaron Judge of the Yankees, who is on a pace to break Roger Maris' record and maybe even Barry Bonds' record.
Well, I want to get back to baseball in a second, but let's just finish with football, because perhaps you are seeing the world through the eyes of New York centricity. Football has replaced baseball, even though you're talking about how well it's doing in New York right now, as the national pastime. Is that basically a given at this point? I mean, is the term America's national pastime obsolete?
It probably is. Football is certainly more popular throughout the country than baseball. Television ratings, even for preseason football games, outrate regular season pennant race baseball games. World Series records and World Series ratings are, maybe a tenth of what the Super Bowl ratings are. So football has definitely gotten more eyeballs and ears than than baseball has over the last couple of decades.
Are the issues that were big several years ago, parents not wanting their kids to play football, thus foretelling the obsolescence of the sport within 10 years, or concern over concussions, concern over the politics of it, these issues also seem to have faded over the horizon, looking in the rearview mirror.
Au contraire. High school football participation is down dramatically over the past few years, and it seems that the effect of the concussions and the injuries and everything else that's happening are causing a lot of young men to look to other sports, baseball, golf, even tennis. Soccer has taken a big jump with young people. So, yeah, there is some attrition going. I think that there's a limit to how much attrition there will be because there are just certain pockets of the country. I mean, you look at Texas and parts of the South where, you know, it's almost a birthright that your kid is going to play football. So I think, there will be a smaller talent pool, but there will always be a big talent pool for football.
The you mentioned tennis. Tennis seems to come and go in terms of the national spotlight or the national conversation. And again, we're viewing this from the perspective of news talk radio as opposed to sports talk. How much impact did this final swan song, if you will, of Serena Williams have upon the game of tennis, women's sports, and anything else sociologically?
Well, it certainly got a lot of publicity. A lot of people feel she is the greatest ever. I mean, there was a movie made of her and her sister and father's life that did pretty well. So it was a big event. But tennis, I think you're right. Tennis comes and goes. And there is not a dominant American male star. And I hate to sound jingoistic about this. The tennis fans in this country are very internationally knowledgeable. They like players from other countries. But I think in order for tennis to surge, it needs a Jimmy Connors, a John McEnroe, some of those great American players who were so good in the 70s and 80s in order to thrive.
Okay, now I'm going to let you get back to the subject you're champing at the bit to talk about, and that is the Mets and the Yankees. I grew up in New York, and I remember the, suffering with the Mets and the joy of the occasional times that they would win a World Series or get into a World Series, some of which they obviously lost. The Yankees, of course, their fans always want a World Series and a championship, or they feel that it's been a failure, although the Yankees have had their share of problems. At the time we're having this conversation, both teams, which weeks ago seemed to have a lock on their divisions, are having a bit of trouble. Is there a lot of nail-biting going on in the Big Apple?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, the Yankees were on a pace to play an historic season. They were close to 120 games projected. Now, if they win 100 games, they'll be fortunate. And, 100 games is a great season. Mets are on a pace to win over 100 games, but they've got the defending world champs Atlanta Braves right there with them, virtually tied for the lead in the NL East. So, yes, it's a very nervous time for New York, but that's what pennant races are all about.
That's Richard Neer, longtime sports talk show host at WFAN in New York, rock radio pioneer, and prolific murder mystery writer. Check him out at richardneer.com. And that about does it for this latest installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation, looking back at the week of Monday, September 5th through Friday, September 9th, 2022. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. And don't forget my song, Idiots, with Gun Hill Road at idiotsvideo.com. The Michael Harrison Wrap. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison.
Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications, presented in association with Talk Media Network and Talkers Magazine. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved.